stepped in. Emily's eyes went wide. Caleb looked stricken. It crossed her mind, suddenly, that she didn't know the rest of his family had survived. They could be dead. Caleb could be the last survivor. Or her imagination provided too many possibilities, each one worse than the last. General Pollock and Sienna might have been captured and brainwashed by now.
Emily.
Caleb sounded worried. He hurried over to the bed and gave her a hug.
She didn't make it out in time.
Emily stared at him as he pulled back. Who didn't make it out in time?
Marion,
Caleb said. She could hear panic and fear in his voice.
They caught her. They took her.
Emily swallowed hard. The fists of justice were sacrificing children and young adults to power their god. Marion, a young woman with magic but only limited training, would be an ideal sacrifice. They'd put her on one of the altars, stab her with their staffs. She shuddered at the thought. Marion had been rude and unpleasant, but she didn't deserve to die like that. No one did.
Then we have to get her back, she said, standing up.
Her legs still felt wobbly. Where is everyone?
Fishing place, Caleb said. I said I'd bring you back with me.
Frida cleared her throat loudly. Emily isn't fit to travel. Bring your family here.
I have to go, Emily said.
She could make it if she tried.
Someone has to explain what's actually happening.
She took a breath.
And someone also has to deal with Harmon. He might have betrayed us.
I'll kill him, Caleb vowed. If he hurt my sister, I'll kill him.
I know.
Emily felt a sudden stab of envy. Marion was lucky to have siblings who cared about her.
And I'll help you.
Chapter 33
She's still alive, Sienna said. I performed a blood rite. She's still alive, but I can't find her.
Emily nodded, trying to breathe through her mouth as she stood in the kitchen. The tiny house in Fishing Place stank of rotting fish, along with other things she didn't care to think about. Caleb had said, as they'd slipped through the streets, that it was a doss house for new immigrants, although most of them apparently moved on as soon as they found a decent job and better lodgings. It had been empty, apparently, until the resistance had turned it into a base. She could see why. Sienna paced the room.
I'll kill him. I swear, I'll kill him.
Emily kept her face expressionless. General Pollock had been utterly furious when Caleb had told him about Harmon. Emily knew he could accept political differences, even outright enmity, but not betrayal. And it hadn't just been General Pollock who'd been betrayed. His children had been lucky to escape the blaze. And one of them didn't escape, Emily thought. Marion was taken by the fists. She gritted her teeth in helpless frustration. Caleb's description of the raid on Sorcerer's Row had been confused, but the attack had clearly come without warning. Marion should have jumped into the escape shaft as soon as all hell broke loose, as her mother had told her to do. Instead, when they'd reached the meeting point, they'd discovered her missing. There had been no way to go back for her before it was too late. And God alone knows what they're doing to her, Emily thought. The fists could use a blood rite themselves, she supposed, but they'd still have problems localizing Sienna and the rest of her family. They might just have decided to sacrifice her. Sienna swung around to face her.
You said you had something important to tell us.
Her eyes burned into Emily's.
What?
I need to discuss it with everyone, Emily said firmly. She didn't want to tell Sienna everything either, but she sighed inwardly. It looked as though the secret of the mimics was on the verge of getting out, too. Were my chat parchments destroyed?
Caleb didn't have time to grab anything, Sienna said. They were probably lost in the flames.
Emily cursed under her breath. The chat parchments could be replaced the next time she met up with her friends, but when would that be? Alassa and Emeka were in Zangaria. Frida and the Gorgon were at Whitehall. She had no idea where Aloha was. Maybe she'd have to organize a reunion in Dragon's Den. She'd meant to show off her house at some point. A sleepover would be fun, perhaps. She rubbed her eyes as Sienna turned away, pacing the room like a caged tiger. Emily felt sorry for her, Sienna wanted to go rescue her daughter, but the older woman's training told her it was better to wait and make preparations instead of rushing into what was probably a trap. The Fists of Justice presumably knew who they'd caught. They had to know Marion would make excellent bait. "It doesn't matter," Emily said. "There are some other chat parchments in the bank."
"Getting word out may help," Sienna said, "but probably not in time to be useful."
Emily nodded slowly. Someone on the outside, perhaps with only a vague idea of what was going on, would be slow to send help. King Randor would be more worried about the theocracy spreading to Zangaria than anything else, while the White Council would need to seek political consensus before dispatching an army of sorcerers and soldiers. And neither of them would know precisely what they were facing. Justice would rip them to shreds.
"I might need to get out of the city," Emily thought. "Someone has to tell the outside world what's going on."
She knew that wouldn't be easy. Hell, she wasn't sure if escape was possible any longer. The bridges were guarded, she'd been told, and the gap was sealed. Teleporting wasn't a possibility as long as Justice's presence dominated the city. Sienna had warded the Doss House thoroughly, and yet Emily could still feel the presence at the back of her mind. The Resistance was already struggling to maintain its numbers, with Justice slowly wearing them down. Given time, the Fists would become invincible.
"I'm sorry," she said quietly.
"Don't be," Sienna said. "This wasn't your fault." The door opened. General Pollock entered, followed by Caleb. They both looked grim.
"It wasn't him," he said shortly.
Emily blinked.
"What?"
"Harmon didn't betray us," General Pollock said. "I poured various potions down his throat, and Caleb cast a number of spells. He couldn't resist us. The questions we asked..."
He sat down heavily.
"He confessed to a number of accounting irregularities," he added, as he reached for a bottle of wine. "Some voting fraud, some embezzlement, enough to get him a few years in slavery if he'd been caught a week or so ago. But he wasn't the one who betrayed us. He was doing what he'd been told to do before I nabbed him."
"Oh," Emily said. She'd been so sure. And yet, in hindsight, she'd known that trouble was coming, even without seeing Vesperian's books. What happens to him now?"
"Right now, he's throwing up the potions we gave him," General Pollock said. "He'll feel like he's been on a 3-day bender for several days to come. And after that, he'll probably want a little revenge."
"Blame it on me," Emily said. Had Janus intended her to draw the wrong conclusion, or had he merely had a stroke of luck?
"I made a mistake."
"It wasn't a bad guess."
Caleb looked down at the floor.
"You just happened to be wrong. I'll speak for you if he does make a fuss," General Pollock said.
"We have other things to worry about right now."
Sienna sat down at the table, resting her elbows on the hard wooden surface as Marcus and Frida entered the kitchen. They both looked as tired as Emily felt.
"Emily, I believe you wish to share some explanations with us."
Emily sat down at the table, taking a moment to gather herself. Caleb already knew some of it, although she hadn't told him everything, but the others didn't, not yet. She wondered if she dared ask for an oath, yet she shook her head. They had a right to know what was going on, without her trying to impose rules. Hopefully, they'd understand the need for secrecy.
"It's a trick," she said flatly. "That entity is no god."
"So it's a trick," Sienna repeated. "What is it?"
"It's something akin to a mimic," Emily said.
She launched into a long explanation, trying to get the idea across without giving too much away. It was probably pointless. Her audience was composed of magicians, but she had to try. She told them about the mimic in Whitehall, about how she'd worked out that it was actually an advanced spell, and how Justice had been designed along the same lines, although with a number of differences. They had to understand what the fanatics had done.
"The mimics are spells," Sienna said when she'd finished.
"At what point, Emily, were you going to tell the rest of us?"
Emily winced at the cold anger in Sienna's tone.
The previous Grandmaster believed the information was better kept secret. He feared that sorcerers would start trying to duplicate the spells if they knew it was possible."
"And yet you also found a way to stop them," Sienna added.
She still didn't seem happy.
"Didn't you?"
"Yes," Emily said. A simple dispelling charm should work against a mimic. Master Wolf had definitely been a genius, she thought, as Sienna reeled. It had shocked her, too, when she'd first realized the truth. Hardly anyone would reach for one of the simplest charms in the spellbook when confronted by a mimic, let alone think to use it. But if one already knew the secret, dealing with a mimic was easy. I tried to dispel justice, she said, outlining everything that had happened in the temple. It didn't work. It might not be possible to stop it, Sienna said slowly, if it absorbs magic and it's largely immune to physical attacks. They'll run out of people to sacrifice, sooner or later. Emily grimaced as a nasty thought occurred to her. They didn't create an entirely autonomous creature, either. Justice seems to have limits. I think they need to make some preparations before they let him go out to hunt.
Those staffs, Caleb said.
I think so. Emily kicked herself silently for not thinking of it first. In hindsight, scaling up the chat parchments so they could channel power was an obvious trick. Aloha was going to be furious when she found out. She'd invented the chat parchments, but she hadn't taken them any further. I think they used justice as a source of power for spells, channeled through the staffs.
So we forced them to drain their power, Sienna said, just like facing a necromancer.
Justice has a lot of power. Emily paused. He's also not particularly intelligent.
You think, Sienna warned.
Emily nodded, curtly. Given time, Justice would grow into an intelligent being, or at least that was what she'd taken from the scrolls. Janus and his comrades really hadn't known what they were doing, and when Justice did develop intelligence, all hell would break out. He'd know what he'd have to do to survive, and he'd want to do it. Beneficence might simply be the first city to be sacrificed to keep him alive.
"Perhaps you didn't use enough power when you tried to dispel him," Caleb suggested. "We could all try."
"It's possible," Emily said. "But the note suggested that dispelling him would be very difficult." She wished, suddenly, that she had a battery. She could have used it to power a dispelling charm and aimed it at Justice. It might have been enough to counter any protections built into the spell matrix. But his magic-absorbing aura would make focusing the charm difficult. She might accidentally feed him instead. Perhaps, if she pushed the charm a little further... "I need time to think," she thought. Sienna was talking, but Emily barely heard her. "And perhaps some more rest." Frida nudged her. "Emily?" Emily looked up. "I'm sorry, I was miles away."
"I said that I will not leave my daughter in their hands," Sienna said. "And we do not have time to waste. We have to take the offensive." "I must agree," General Pollock said. "The longer we delay, the stronger they get."
Emily glanced at Marcus, who nodded. She agreed. Justice was steadily tightening his grip on the city. More and more people were surrendering to him as his constant presence wore down their will to resist. And there was no way to evacuate the city in the hopes that Justice would starve. He'd just cross the bridges and walk into Swanhaven or Cockatrice. "We could blow up the entire city," she thought. The nuke spell glimmered in her mind, a mocking reminder of a power she didn't dare use. But would even that produce enough power to destroy him? "We might be able to limit his reach," she said, remembering the cobwebs she'd sensed in the temple. "Cutting him off from his supporters and warding him might be enough to limit his power intake. He'd start to starve."
"And if you're wrong," her thoughts mocked her, "you'll lead everyone to their doom."
Frida cleared her throat. "We attacked them once," she said. "Will it be so easy to attack them a second time?"
"It wasn't easy," General Pollock said. "We lost 50 men in the attacks."
"And Marion," Sienna said quietly.
"They knew we were coming," Frida reminded him. "General, getting close to the temple a second time might be impossible." Emily nodded in grim agreement. It hadn't been easy to slip through the guards the first time, even though Janus had implied she'd been allowed to enter the temple. She supposed he could have been bluffing, but he'd had no reason to lie. Now, with their temple damaged and their reputation tarnished, the Fists of Justice were unlikely to let anyone anywhere near their god. Getting close enough to do some damage might be impossible.
"We'll have to think of something," she thought.
We could try to lure justice out of the temple, Marcus said. Perhaps we could start pushing the protesters back from the banks. They'd have to do something to remind everyone they're in charge.
We could go after the staffs, Frida offered. She winked at Emily. They break as easily as wands.
That would work.
Emily glanced at Sienna. Can you get a rough idea of Marion's location?
Very rough.
Sienna shot an odd look at her husband.
Everything is a blur.
General Pollock looked worried.
I've never heard of anything that can cut a blood tie completely, he said. You should be able to find her.
There are some forms of disownment that would cut all ties, Sienna said. But I'd have to do the rituals to make them work. Marion couldn't do it, let alone an outsider.
And you might kill her, Caleb said quietly.
I might, Sienna agreed.
There's a reason they're rarely used.
There was a long silence. Emily looked from Sienna to Caleb and back again, feeling an odd flicker of something she didn't care to name. Family. She liked Caleb's family, but did she want to marry them? And yet she wasn't seeing them at their best. They'd lost one child to a necromancer, while another had been kidnapped. Their house had been destroyed, leaving them homeless.
I think it's time to start working on a plan, General Pollock said. I'll gather the remaining forces, with the intention of luring the enemy out of place. Marcus, I want you to try and find a way into the temple that won't be risky. We could go through the drains.
Emily had to smile. That was a good thought, if it was workable. If nothing else, Janus and his ilk might not notice until it was too late. She might have an opportunity to take the cobwebs apart before they noticed her, trapping justice in one place.
I'll see what I can find.
Marcus shrugged.
They might have sealed the drains, of course.
They might, General Pollock agreed.
Dear,
he looked at Sienna.
Start working on ways to break their staffs.
Or drain them, Frida said. What happens if you cancel the spellware they use to focus the magic?
Emily glanced at Marcus.
What happens if you use a cancellation charm on a chat parchment?
I don't know, Marcus said. The magic is linked to blood, so it's quite resistant.
He stroked his chin.
We do know that burning the parchment renders it useless, he added after a moment. But smaller charms might not work.
They won't have used linking charms for their spell work.
Sienna's voice was cold.
I'll see what I can do.
General Pollock nodded.
Emily, you know these creatures best, he said. See what you can come up with.
I will, Emily said.
An idea was already at the back of her mind. The Hands of Justice had taken one idea and scaled it up a little. What would happen if Emily took their idea and scaled it up still further?
Can I borrow Caleb to help me? We do work well together.
I bet you do, Marcus teased.
Sienna gave Emily a long, hard look.
Yes, provided you keep Frida with you as well, she said firmly. That is not negotiable.
Emily clamped down hard on the urge to make any number of sarcastic remarks. Caleb's sister was missing. He wasn't going to waste time making out with her when his talents were needed elsewhere. Caleb had his flaws, but he wasn't that sort of person.
I understand, she said.
No doubt Sienna would have insisted on leaving the door open if Frida hadn't been there to play chaperone. Frida will be helpful, too.
Good, Sienna said. We need to move as soon as possible.
They'll expect us to move at night, Caleb pointed out.
He jabbed a finger towards the stained window. It wouldn't be long until darkness fell over the city.
They'll be ready. We'll see if we can get into the sewers, General Pollock said, and we'll see what other problems we can give them, too.
Emily rubbed her forehead. She was starting to feel hungry again. Her head ached. She gritted her teeth, remembering Pandora's words. She'd have to find something to eat quickly before she got to work.
We have to stop them, she said.
Hurting the fists of justice wouldn't be enough. Janus had to be stopped. I don't think they knew what they were doing. Sienna's eyebrows crawled up.
Are you sure?
The scrolls were very basic in many ways, Emily said. Whoever had written them, she was sure it had been Master Wolf, had been a genius, but there had been a startling lack of explanation. Most sorcerers would know better than to cast a spell when they didn't know what it was intended to do. And Janus talked about summoning a god, not creating one. I think they don't even begin to grasp the underlying theory.
She sighed. Janus had effectively hypnotized himself. And when they lose control, she added, they might not even notice.
Chapter 34.
Nice room, Frida said sarcastically. She sent a light globe ahead of her as she hurried into the room. I can't imagine any monkey business here. Emily had to admit she had a point. The room had been stripped bare of everything, apart from a table so rickety she was afraid to breathe on it, and a framework in the corner that might have been part of a bed. The wooden floor was sticky, her feet making odd sounds as she walked over to the table and dropped her notebook on top. She didn't want to know what caused the smell, but it was everywhere. It was probably the least romantic place she'd ever seen. They would have stuffed an entire family in here if they were lucky, Caleb said from the door. This would have been all they'd had. Ouch. Emily had never grown quite used to the limited privacy at Whitehall, but this room was far worse. No one would have any privacy. Can you find us some chairs?
Sure, Caleb said. Just give me a moment.
Frida caught Emily's eye as Caleb hurried back out of the room. Make sure you eat something, she said. I can hear your stomach from over here. Emily nodded, tiredly, as she opened the notebook. Marcus had given it to her, explaining that he'd started producing them to promote the bank. Emily doubted the notebook's help to bring in new customers, but it would be useful. She needed to write down everything she could remember from the scrolls, then try to draw it into a coherent whole.
Here, Caleb said, dragging a pair of chairs into the room. I'll just go pick up the third chair.
Emily took one of the chairs, sat down, and started to write. The spell notation was ancient, but thankfully she'd had plenty of time in Old Whitehall to get used to reading it. She translated it mentally as she went along, noting where the designer had cunningly buried aspects that would only come into play when the entire spell was created. Justice would develop intelligence, of a sort, fairly quickly. Intelligence that would be focused around his core principles. Emily wondered, as she sketched out each set of spells, just what the original designer had been thinking. The entity didn't seem designed to serve as a weapon. Maybe he just wanted an implacable judge, too, Emily mused. Justice, at first, would not be able to break his own rules. But as he grew more and more intelligent, she had no doubt he'd be able to spot loopholes and take advantage of them. Or maybe he was setting a booby trap for future generations. I think we might be able to copy the trick they used, she mused. Getting a spell through Justice's magic-absorbing field would be tricky. Perhaps that was why the dispelling charm hadn't worked. But she'd had an idea. Linking charms weren't affected by wards. We'd just have to get something else through the haze. I hit him with rocks, Frida said. It had some effect. Emily nodded. Justice might have been surprised. If he was capable of being surprised, when the rocks hadn't fallen out of the air as soon as they'd entered his field. Most magicians didn't think to use spells to throw objects rather than propel them through the air. It was a weakness she'd taken advantage of more than once. But lacking any real physical component, flying rocks were unlikely to rip him apart. They were inside his field, she said, as she sketched out a set of notes. Sorcerer's Row might be in ruins, but Marcus had enough supplies, in the bank, to give them a chance to build their own weapons. It wasn't as if a staff was anything more than a carefully primed piece of wood. That gives us an in. She frowned. Something was nagging at the back of her mind, something she'd missed.
You're talking about putting a charm on the end of a staff and thrusting it into him, Caleb mused. How do you know the charm will survive the field?
Frida snickered. Caleb glared at her.
Shut up.
Emily rubbed her forehead, tiredly. I don't, she said, choosing to ignore Frida's unsubtle joke. We might have to launch several staffs at him. Risky, Frida said. We don't have any way to measure the potency of his field. Even the most powerful wards barely notice chat parchments, Emily pointed out. She could do a couple of experiments. It wouldn't be too hard. And if we could get a modified spell through the haze, we could take Justice apart before he has a chance to kill us all. It might work. Caleb stroked his chin as he stared down at her notes.
What if we set up a link between Heart's Eye and here?
You'd be able to overfeed him instead.
We could try, Emily mused. She didn't think it was a good idea. Overfeeding the entity might be disastrous. Either Justice would become more powerful, or there would be an explosion. But I don't think there'd be much of a city afterwards. She sighed. I don't think we could even get to Heartside to set up the other end of the link. It's a very long way away.
True,
Frida agreed. Emily looked down at her parchment. She was missing something. Something obvious. But what? A nasty thought struck her.
Caleb, she said slowly, where are Karen and Croce?
Croce's teaching some of the young men how to fight, Caleb said. Karen was brewing potions. Why?
Emily wasn't sure she wanted to follow the chain of logic to its ultimate destination, but she didn't have a choice.
Caleb, she said, the attack on your house. How did they get inside the ward so quickly?
Caleb looked back at her, puzzled.
They must have hit them with staggering force. Those staffs they use channel vast amounts of magic.
Your mother did a very good job, Emily pointed out. There were too many oddities about the whole story for her to take it at face value. The Fists of Justice hadn't just punched through Sienna's wards. They'd devastated Sorcerer's Row itself. The wards were designed to deflect magic, not absorb it. You should have had ample warning to grab what you needed and run before it was too late.
She closed her eyes, unwilling to say the next words. The attack must have started from inside the wards.
Caleb, I think Marion betrayed us.
Caleb stared at her in shock.
Emily?
She never liked Emily, Frida put in. And she was obsessed with Justice.
Shut up! Caleb snapped.
Emily sensed ragged magic sparkling around him and winced inwardly. Caleb was as tired as she. They were all tired.
Emily, Marion wouldn't have betrayed us.
Someone told the Fists of Justice that I was going to the temple, Emily said. She could see the pain on his face. She damned herself, silently, for making him suffer. Someone let them into the wards. All she needed was a chat parchment and a staff of her very own.
They didn't capture her, Frida put in. She went with them willingly.
Shut up, Caleb hissed. Shut up, or you will never speak again.
Emily groaned inwardly as Caleb started to pace the room. She was too tired. She should have talked to him in private. Or perhaps talked to his parents. He was going to hate her for this, even if she was right. And if she was wrong.
It might not have been her fault, she said. Janus had known that General Pollock had been appointed to command the city guard. He'd had ample opportunity to prepare a few contingency plans. If she'd seen Justice, she might have been overwhelmed.
Marion would not have betrayed us, Caleb said. She...
His voice trailed off. Emily understood all too well. Marion had loved Casper, mourned his death, blamed Emily for his death. She'd had good reason to want to follow Justice, even before the entity had begun making appearances. And once Justice had gotten his hooks into Marion's mind, she would no longer have known right from wrong. She'd been so focused on avenging Casper that she hadn't realized what she was doing.
And what, her own thoughts asked her, if she did know what she was doing?
Emily.
Caleb breathed rapidly, clenching and unclenching his fists.
Emily, if you're wrong about this.
Emily silently filled in the blanks. The end of their relationship, certainly. A new enemy, one who knew too much about her. And perhaps Caleb would try to kill her. She wouldn't even blame him if he wanted to take a swing at her, not after what she'd told him. He valued his family, loved his family. The thought of losing them hurt him more than he could say.
And if he had to choose between me and them, she thought bitterly, he'd choose them.
She closed her eyes in pain. She'd never had siblings. She'd never really understood, not at an emotional level, just what it meant to have siblings. Or perhaps what it meant to be betrayed by someone so close to her. Caleb would never recover from the blow, even if Marion turned out to be innocent. He'd still have to cope with Emily hurting him.
I'm sorry, she said. She didn't open her eyes. Someone had to have betrayed us.
Emily heard footsteps echoing across the room, followed by the door slamming. She opened her eyes. Caleb was gone. She wondered if he'd gone to tell his parents. To tell his parents what? That their youngest daughter might have betrayed them? Or to formally end the courtship? Or... They'd had fights before, Emily remembered. There had been friendly arguments over magic techniques, and a nastier argument over more intimate matters. They'd hurt, more than she cared to admit, but they'd kissed and made up. She hoped, deep inside, that they could put this argument behind them, too. "He's never been a younger sister," Frida said. "He can't understand what it's like." Emily gave her a sharp look. "Explain." Frida looked tired. "The first two or three children are treated like valuable children." Her lips twitched, as if she wanted to smile humorlessly. "After that, they become a drain on resources. The older siblings know they're wanted. The younger siblings aren't so sure. All the bitter resentments start to pile up." "Marion was loved," Emily said. Frida had grown up in the Cairngorms, where families lived close to the edge. She'd known, from the moment she was old enough to think, that her family considered her expendable, that she might be killed one day so the rest of the family might live. Marion had lived a very different life. "Marion is loved." "She might not have seen it that way," Frida said quietly. Emily looked down at the table. They had to stop justice. She knew they had to stop justice before the entire city was consumed. And yet, part of her wanted to stay in the room and hide. She'd hurt Caleb badly, even if she was right. And if she was wrong... She shook her head. It didn't bear thinking about. "Fuck it." She looked up at the younger girl. "Do any of us have a happy family?" "Emeka," Frida said after a moment. "And Jade." Emily nodded tiredly. Jade was an only child. So was Alassa. Frida had no intention of ever going home, any more than Emily herself. Emily had no idea about the Gorgon or Aloha. Emeka was the only one with a large and happy family. And even her family has secrets, Emily thought. What will happen when some of them get out? She rose, feeling her joints starting to ache. Her body was tired, and her soul... She felt dead, as if her thoughts and feelings were wrapped in a gray haze. She wanted to climb into bed and forget the world, forget everything. She knew, intellectually, that she was being stupid, but it was hard to believe it. She didn't want to believe it. "Sit down," Frida said. "I'll get you some food." She rose and gently pushed Emily back into her chair. "I know how you feel," she said briskly, "but you're in no state to talk to anyone at the moment." Emily closed her eyes again. Perhaps a little nap. She heard Frida walking across the room and leaving, closing the door behind her. A little nap. The door opened again, seconds later. Or had she fallen asleep? She couldn't swear to anything. And yet the footsteps echoing towards her were not Frida's. She turned. Sienna stood behind her, carrying a tray of food and a mug of water. Emily cringed inwardly. Sienna was the last person she wanted to talk to right now, even though they had to work together. If Caleb had been mad at her, Sienna would be even worse. Perhaps she should save time and insult the rest of the family. "Eat," Sienna ordered, putting the tray on the table. "Please." Emily hesitated. Sienna snorted. "You would hardly be the first young woman to have emotional problems at the worst possible time." She sounded more annoyed than angry. "Or to put your foot in your mouth when no one has any patience or tolerance at all. You need to eat, so you will eat." She tapped the table meaningfully. "Eat." Emily gritted her teeth and took the spoon. Sienna, or someone, had cooked another fish stew. It smelled vaguely off, but her spells insisted it was safe to eat. The people who lived in Fishing Place probably didn't get the best food, she thought, as she took a bite. It was so bland and flavorless that she wished for spices, or even salt and pepper. The potato was just as flavorless as the stew. They probably cooked it for hours, just to make sure it was safe to eat, she thought. Sergeant Harkin's lessons on outdoor survival hadn't been remotely fun. She suspected the boys had gotten more out of them than any of the girls. "At least I can eat it," Sienna sat down, facing her. Now, do you want something to drown your sorrows, or are you up to being sensible?
Emily took another bite of the food.
Sensible? Glad to hear it, Sienna said. She met Emily's eyes. We have one problem at the moment, Janus and his pet creature. I expect you and Caleb to work together without letting your emotions get in the way. Can I rely on you to do that?
I think so.
Emily looked down at the table. I don't...
He told me.
Sienna sounded as though she'd bitten into a lemon.
I don't want to admit the possibility, but it does exist.
Emily refused to look up. If she was right, Sienna's daughter had, willingly or unwillingly, betrayed her family. And if she was wrong, she hoped, for Sienna's sake, that she was wrong. The prospect of having to face an outraged mother across a dueling circle was terrifying, but so too was the thought of Sienna's life being torn apart. She didn't want to hurt any of them.
We will hope it isn't true, Sienna said, and yet we will have to consider the possibility that it might be true.
Caleb hates me, Emily said miserably.
He's certainly not very pleased with you, Sienna agreed.
She sounded oddly amused.
Do you think you are the first person to have romantic problems?
Emily looked up.
No.
I've been a young woman, as much as my children might wish to disbelieve it, Sienna said wryly. I have a mother, sisters, even aunties and female friends. And I happen to know more about Karen's relationships than she'd be happy about me knowing. Fights between couples are not unique.
She snorted.
After this whole affair is finished, you and Caleb can sit down and decide how you want to proceed. Believe me, I have had many arguments with my husband. We have often thrown things at each other.
Emily sighed. That isn't reassuring.
I suppose not, Sienna said.
She rose.
You have work to do. I expect you and Caleb to concentrate on your problems afterwards, when the entire city is not in danger. If your relationship is strong, you'll get through this and be all the stronger for it. If not, you're better off finding out now than when you're married and have three children.
I know, Emily said.
And if you decide not to continue with the relationship, cut it off cleanly, Sienna said firmly. You'll just make yourself and Caleb miserable if you prolong the agony.
Emily looked up at her. Did you ever accuse your husband's sister of treachery?
No, Sienna said.
She smiled, rather dryly.
But as disagreeable as that woman is, I never had reason to suspect her of being a traitor.
Her voice hardened.
If Marion betrayed us of her own free will, I will take steps, she said coldly.
Emily shivered helplessly. She had no doubt, suddenly, that Sienna would kill her own daughter, if necessary.
And if she was enchanted into betraying us, I will do everything in my power to free her from the taint. She will be free, even if it costs me everything.
She looked down at Emily.
And if you are wrong, Emily, I will know it wasn't through malice, she added. I won't hold it against you. The world would be a happier place, perhaps, if more people remembered that some mistakes are just mistakes.
I know, Emily whispered. Thank you.
Chapter 35.
That's the plan, General Pollock said. Do you have any questions?
Emily shook her head. The plan was simple enough, but she was all too aware of its weaknesses. If Janus knew more about sorcery and the forces he'd unleashed than she thought, he'd be able to deduce their plan. Indeed, it was the only plan that had a hope of both destroying justice and rescuing Marion.
She glanced at Caleb. Her lover, her ex, perhaps, resolutely did not look back at her. His younger brother wasn't so restrained. The nasty look he gave Emily would have scared her to death 5 years ago. Now, after facing necromancers and dark wizards and all manner of strange creatures, it was no longer so intimidating. She resisted the urge to sneer back at him as General Pollock fielded a couple of questions. Marcus and Harmon were laying plans to take control of the city after justice was destroyed. And they're being a little premature, Emily thought, as she glanced down at the staff in her hand. We haven't won yet.
She tested the staff, remembering lessons she'd taken with Sergeant Harkin. Staff fighting wasn't her forte. She'd reluctantly come to admit that she had no talent for weapons at all. But the staff felt right, like the staves she'd trained to use. Hopefully, Janus and his comrades would overlook it. They'd assume the Resistance would resort to non-magical weapons, knowing magic was unreliable near Justice. And yet, she reached out mentally and felt the spell embedded in the wood. It had taken nearly 3 hours to make staves for everyone, even though, technically, any piece of wood should have sufficed. The charm at the end of the staff alone had taken nearly 2 hours. It would have been completely impossible without Sienna and her contact, Emily thought sourly. Too many secrets had leaked out over the last few days. Someone with an imagination could probably put the pieces together and work out how to create their own identity if they were foolish enough to try. And even with the staves, this is still a gamble. She shivered as General Pollock dismissed the first group of Resistance fighters. She'd worked through the equations, using what she'd learned from the Mimic to understand how Justice worked. But she knew there was no guarantee of success. Whoever had designed the Mimic she'd killed had been careful to leave a safeguard, a simple trick that could be used to destroy the creature. But the Fists of Justice hadn't even known they needed a safeguard, let alone possessed the skill to implant one. No trained sorcerer would have risked casting so many spells without a solid idea of what they did. Frida nudged her.
"You sure you're all right?"
"Yes," Emily said crossly. She'd eaten enough to keep her going.
"I'll survive."
She ran her hand through her hair as General Pollock dismissed the second group of fighters, sending them out to wreak havoc. The Fists of Justice would know, of course, that the attacks were diversions, but they'd still have to deal with them. Large parts of the city were already starting to starve, something General Pollock insisted would undermine the new government. Emily hoped he was right. The Fists of Justice had banned fishing boats from leaving the cauldron, but they'd presumably stockpiled food in anticipation of having thousands of hungry mouths to feed. Unless they planned to feed the starving to their god, she thought grimly. They might have planned to purge everyone who wasn't already committed to them.
Karen and I will be leaving in 10.
General Pollock glanced at his watch, although Emily was sure he could feel time ticking away.
Dear, a word.
Sienna nodded, tight-lipped. She followed her husband into the next room, leaving the youngsters alone. Emily found herself torn between speaking to Caleb, even though his siblings were also in the room, and keeping her mouth closed. She didn't know what to say, or even if she should say anything. Frida hadn't helped by insisting everything was Caleb's fault. She closed her eyes for a long moment, centering herself. There would be problems. Of course there would be problems. But she'd survive. If worse came to worst, she could put their plans into action herself, without him. The university didn't need Caleb, did it? But she didn't want to shut him out of his dream. She shook her head, silently promising herself that she would talk to Lady Barb as soon as possible. She needed advice from someone she trusted to be helpful, but detached. Sienna returned, tapping her staff on the ground.
"Let's move. Time is not on our side."
Croce rose, looking pleased to be finally doing something. Emily looked at Caleb, feeling another pang, then stood and followed them to the door. Frida slipped up next to her as Sienna checked the wards and opened the wooden door. The stench of poverty flowed into the room.
"Make sure we have everything," Sienna said. "We won't be coming back."
Outside, the streets were even darker than the previous night. Justice's presence seemed ever more powerful, whispers filling the air whenever Emily allowed her mental defenses to slip. Sienna's wards had done an effective job at shutting out the entity's influence, but now... Emily glanced at Caleb, feeling a flicker of genuine concern. Caleb was hurting, just like her. Who knew what Justice's influence would do to him? Or to me, Emily thought, as she cast a night vision spell. Or to any of us. She resisted the urge to cover her ears as they hurried down the darkened streets. The whispers couldn't be shut out so easily. She gritted her teeth, raising more defenses as she looked around. Fishing Place was a nightmare, stone and wooden buildings piled on buildings until the entire complex had become a maze. She forced herself to breathe through her mouth as the smell of rotting fish and too many unwashed humans in close proximity grew stronger. Sienna had banned her young daughters from visiting Fishing Place, Emily recalled. Emily didn't blame her for a second.
The streets are not normally this quiet.
Caleb slipped up beside her, his face pale in the darkness. He sounded as though he was trying to carry on, despite everything.
This place never sleeps.
Emily nodded. General Pollock had told her that a bunch of fists had tried to enter Fishing Place, only to be driven out by the locals. Surprisingly, Janus hadn't launched an all-out attack. Or perhaps it wasn't that surprising. Fishing Place would be an absolute nightmare for any hostile force, a place where the defenders knew the region intimately and could turn it against the invaders. Better to leave them to starve than to risk an offensive. Or maybe they're preparing to send justice into Fishing Place, Emily mused. Or do they think we can push him out? She glanced at Caleb. Was he trying to pretend their argument had never happened? Or was he trying to put his emotions behind him during the mission? Or... She shook her head in annoyance. Boys were so hard to understand sometimes. But then she'd heard boys saying that girls were hard to understand, too. It wasn't that hard, was it? But then she'd often found her fellow girls hard to understand, too, and she was a girl. The boys didn't even have that advantage.
They must be hiding, Emily said. She doubted the locals were sleeping. Are they going to get in our way?
Probably not, Caleb said. We're not a threat.
Emily looked at the darkened houses as they slipped down a narrow street. They looked shabby, as if the owners couldn't be bothered to maintain them properly. Small piles of garbage were everywhere, adding to the stench. There was no rubbish collection service here. The remainder of the city might be reasonably clean by local standards, but Fishing Place was a mess. She doubted any of the permanent residents gave much of a damn about hygiene. The ones who have the drive to get out do, she thought, as they halted on the edge of the district. And those who don't are trapped until they die. Emily sucked in her breath. A large building lay ahead of them, wrapped in shadow. Beyond it, Emily saw the sea. They were right on the edge of the island. The stench was stronger somehow, sinking into her very bones. She had no idea how the locals managed to tolerate it, day in and day out. She'd have to burn her clothes and bathe for hours when she finally managed to leave the city.
Stay here, Sienna hissed. I'll beckon you when the time comes.
Caleb reached for Emily's hand as Sienna hurried into the darkness. Emily hesitated, then pulled her hand back. They couldn't hit the reset button, no matter how much she might wish they could. Afterwards, if they survived, they would have to sit down and have a proper chat about the future, and decide what, exactly, they wanted from each other. Alassa knew she was working towards marriage, Emily thought numbly, and Emeka knew she just wanted to have fun. Frida popped up behind them, leaning forward and peering towards the sewage plant. Emily was almost relieved. Frida would save her from having to have that conversation until they were safe. She pushed her emotions out of her head as Sienna returned, looking pleased with herself.
The original guards were gone, she said.
She motioned them to follow her back to the building.
I dealt with the necromancers.
Emily glanced around with interest as they walked up to the doors and into the building, trying to ignore the 7 dead bodies on the ground. She'd never grown used to seeing death, even though it had been a constant companion since Shaedae had kidnapped her for the first time. She didn't even want to think about how many people had died, directly or indirectly, because of her. Vesperian would never have been able to lure so many investors into his web without her innovations, and she'd heard that some of his investors had committed suicide after his death.
This place stinks, Frida said wryly. What is it?
A wonder of the world.
Sienna sounded oddly amused as she opened a hatch and motioned for them to climb down.
The sewers of beneficence.
Emily nodded in agreement when Frida shot her a questioning look. The sewers were a wonder of the world, all the more so for not using any magic at all. Beneficence had cold running water piped to every home, at least every home connected to the water pipes, and a web of sewers to take away the waste. And now, with manure being sifted for saltpeter and other chemical compounds, the sewers were profitable,
She groaned as Sienna launched a light globe into the air, casting an eerie radiance over the scene. It was somehow not a surprise to spot the V emblazoned into the wall. Emily scrambled down the ladder into a chamber that looked like a giant swimming pool, only one crammed with liquid waste rather than water. Emily felt her stomach churn as the stench somehow managed to grow even worse. She forced herself to look away as Sienna led them towards a giant tunnel heading into the darkness. There would be all sorts of bacteria breeding in the pool, she knew, as well as methane. Striking a match might cause an explosion. Or was that right? There was a way to get methane from manure, if she recalled correctly. She just couldn't remember how. Something to think about, she told herself. The ledge felt dangerously narrow, given the risk of falling into the slop. If we can make methane, what can we do with it? It didn't get any better as they made their way down the tunnel. The ceiling was too low for comfort, even though she knew it was safe. Sienna and Caleb had to keep their heads down as they walked to avoid bumping them into the ceiling. Emily was shorter, but she still kept her head down, fearing contact with the roof. She clearly saw faint slime lining the walls, droplets of water dripping down and plopping into the sewer. The sewage itself seemed to ripple, although there was no wind. Emily kept a wary eye on the liquid as they headed further down the tunnel. The stories she'd heard about alligators in the sewers suddenly seemed credible. Frida coughed suddenly. The noise was so loud that Emily jumped. Quiet, Sienna hissed.
Sorry, Frida said. But how do we know we're heading in the right direction?
I have a blood tie to Marion, Sienna snapped. We're heading straight towards her.
Or as close to straight as possible, Emily thought, as they passed a crossroads and crawled over a bridge barely wide enough for a child. She had no idea how much the sewage workers were paid, but it wasn't enough. Maintaining the network had to be an absolute nightmare.
We should come up in Temple Row, but what if we can't get all the way up?
She felt her magic tingle and knew the answer.
We'll have to blast our way through the roof.
They keep talking about monsters down here, Croce said.
He was bringing up the rear.
All the sorcerers who flush their experiments down the drain, that practice was banned years ago.
Sienna glanced back, annoyed.
Although the giant spiders ate up the giant cockroaches.
Emily swallowed hard. She hoped Sienna was joking. Pouring potions down the drain would be dangerous, she reminded herself. Professor Fand had cautioned them, time and time again, to be careful when disposing of alchemical brews, even ones that had seemingly failed. Putting a dozen failed potions in the same place was asking for trouble. Most sorcerers and alchemists would know better, wouldn't they? She pushed the thought aside as Sienna reached a ladder, leading up into the darkness. A reddish liquid dripped down into the sewage. Emily turned away, revolted. It looked like blood. She didn't think she wanted to know for sure. If someone had died up there...
Keep back, Sienna ordered. I'm going up.
Emily felt her skin crawl as Caleb's mother scrambled up the ladder. The sense of something being wrong, very wrong, was growing stronger. And yet, she flinched as she heard a clanging sound, followed by a flash of magic. The trickle of blood turned into a stream.
Come on up, Sienna hissed. Emily glanced at Caleb, who shrugged and started to climb the ladder. Emily followed him, trying to keep her mouth firmly closed. The blood splashed over her fingers and stained her clothes, making the ladder slippery as she inched her way upwards. Caleb helped her out when she reached the top, allowing her to look around. The floor was awash in blood, slowly flowing to the hatch and pouring down into the sewer. She looked up and stared in disgusted horror. Bodies, countless bodies, hung from meat hooks, blood dripping to the floor. They had suffered the death of a thousand cuts.
They must have used something to keep the blood from clotting, she thought numbly. She felt as though she'd gone beyond horror, beyond feeling anything. Then they hung them up here to die.
Fuck,
Frida muttered. Emily glanced at her. Frida was covered in blood. They were all covered in blood. Their clothes clinging to their bodies as blood pooled in their boots. Emily wanted a bath, but she knew she didn't have time.
They had to find Marion and destroy justice. There was no other choice.
It beats falling in the sewage, Croce said.
Frida smiled. Emily glanced from one to the other, then dismissed the thought. She'd been taught not to treat blood lightly, to do everything in her power to make sure none of her blood ever fell into enemy hands. And even a dead man's blood could be used in a potion or turned against his relatives. She looked up at the bodies again and shivered. This wasn't part of a dark rite or a ritual, not as far as she could tell. It was savagery, plain and simple.
This way, Sienna said.
Emily had a flicker of déjà vu as they made their slow way out of the chamber and up the steps. The temple was as dark and silent as the grave, yet she could feel Justice's presence all around her. There were no guards, no one trying to block their way. She wondered, darkly, what it meant. Had General Pollock drawn off everyone? Or did Janus feel his god could protect itself? She wouldn't have bet against it. Janus truly believed he'd summoned a god. That might work against him, she mused. They reached the top of the stairs and headed down the corridor. Perhaps we can break his faith. She tested the staff carefully. The spell should work, she thought, but if it didn't... We're on the ground floor. Sienna touched her hand to her heart, then moved it around until she was pointing at a pair of stone doors. She's in the hall. Croce moved forward, staff at the ready.
On three?
On three, Sienna confirmed. Get ready. Emily braced herself as Sienna counted down to zero, then cast a powerful blasting spell at the doors. They shattered, pieces of rock flying in all directions as Croce and Caleb ran forward. Sienna, Emily, and Frida followed them into the room and stopped. Justice stood in front of the altar, his presence so overwhelming that it was like running into a brick wall. Behind him, Emily barely made out Marion lying on the altar. She was wrapped in powerful magic.
Welcome, a mocking voice said.
Emily glanced around. Janus stood by the wall, leaning on his staff. A thin smile played over his face.
You will be judged.
Chapter 36. Shit, Emily thought. She forced herself to think, as Justice's presence beat against her wards. She'd reworked them over the last few hours, using everything she'd learned to block the entity's influence, but it was still wearing them down. The rune on her chest burned, as if the entire room was supercharged with subtle magic. It felt like overkill. Anyone who spent more than a few minutes in Justice's presence would be drawn to him, subtle magic or not.
You're mad.
Sienna's voice sounded faint, as though she were a very long way away.
This thing is not a god. And yet, he will pass judgment on you.
Janus didn't sound angry. He didn't sound as though he had anything to defend. He sounded as though he was so absolutely sure of himself that he didn't need to crush dissent.
He is a god.
Emily looked at Justice, trying to see through the haze. The entity had definitely grown stronger, its presence more substantial. It was hard, so hard to make out a face, but she was sure there was intelligence looking back at her. It wasn't a mimic, she reminded herself sharply. The sole mimic she'd encountered had been driven by hunger and malevolence, but Justice was different. It, perhaps, felt like a stern father, peering down at her from on high. She wasn't sure she wanted to look any closer. The entity's sheer presence might infect her mind. It's an idea, she thought numbly, and ideas spread from mind to mind. She looked past the entity, trying to see Marion. Caleb's sister was wrapped in magic, yet she was clearly being prepared for sacrifice. It was hard to tell if Marion was awake and aware or not, but she'd clearly bitten off a bit more than she could chew. Emily wanted to walk around the entity and check Marion personally, yet her legs refused to move. The entity had them in its clutches.
Let my daughter go, Sienna snapped. She's an innocent. No one is innocent, Janus informed her. All must be judged.
Emily felt a hot flash of envy. Marion had betrayed them, willingly or not. And yet Sienna was still prepared to fight for her daughter, even if the fight seemed hopeless. Marion didn't know how lucky she was. Sienna raised her staff.
"Name me one person who is completely without sin," she challenged. "Your monster will destroy everyone."